You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Diablo's Den, the Corona Chronicles, episode number 4. I am your co-host, Jay Reason, and I'm here with the one, the only, Danny Diablo, a.k.a. Lord Ezak.
What's up, Queens, baby, all day. Queens finest. Shout out to Queens finest.
Man, we've got a great episode for you tonight, and we're really excited about everything going on. So before we bring in and let you guys know about our guests, we're going to just do the quick rundown and see what's been happening for the past week and shit. Oh, so, shit. what's been going on since we last recorded
you
with you?
You fucked me up today, B.
Why? What happened?
I've been listening to Mind Force. Leeway, if Leeway had a baby with No Mercy.
Yeah. Dude, it's really good. So, I'm literally, the thing I've been checking out.
Put me on, bro. Yeah. Listen, to all the guys at Mind Force, I'm sorry I said I didn't know you guys or anything. But your shit is dope, and now I learned.
Yeah, well, listen, here's the thing.
You taught an old dog new tricks.
Here's the thing.
And I listened to it. My girl was like, that shit's hard.
Yeah,
girl,
this, they just dropped a new record at the top of this week that me and Danny are talking about. So that's been the one thing we've been talking about, the new Mind Force EP called Swinging Swords, Chopping Lords.
Swinging Swords, Chopping Lords. I'm a lord. I swing swords all the time. Yeah.
So that's hard. So that just came out, and it's crazy because I waited up the other night to buy it on vinyl at midnight, and that shit sold out within the hour. They sold out the whole first press.
I'm telling you right now, it sounds like Leeway mixed with No Mercy, though. So Mike Muir's old band, No Mercy, McClain. It is the production of they are metalheads.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and you know what's too is a
hardcore singer. It's beautiful.
We're going to wait to announce this a little bit more, Ed, down the line, the project that you and I are working on. But we know that Jay is going to be the singer of Mind Force is going to be helping you and I with one of those things. So it's going to be cool to have him in.
Hello, I'm going to grab his guitar player. Too.
Well, we're going to have to get Mike in there. Shout out to both those guys.
Him and Maddie Posse together would be great.
So that's awesome, man.
What
else has been happening in your neck of the woods, man? You back to work this week, you were saying, right?
Fuck yeah. Yeah, I worked. I was working in Queens, in Flushing. And it's crazy because I'm working construction with everyone with a mask on.
Yeah.
Even the drunk Mexicans who are doing the flagging, they're drunk with a mask on. I'm like, this guy's drunk. Who the fuck cares about the mask, bro? I'm going to start drinking. This nigga's drinking all day. But you know what? It's cool to talk to people. It's cool to talk shit to people.
Right.
You know, the funniest thing that I noticed in New York City that's really bothering me, the kids in New York City, the younger generation, don't have a New York accent.
What do you mean?
Like, they're whack. They're like, you're like hipsters. They're like, no, they're mustaches and shit and tight-ass clothes and they don't fucking have no accent. So let's say the Northern Boulevard is going this way, two big lanes, right?
Okay.
One this way, one this way.
Right.
So being construction work, my boss, Vinny, we go in the car this way, right? We park next to the construction site. So cops are here. So back in the day, cops wouldn't bother construction workers.
Right,
like,
yeah, no.
In the city. He's like, but he said in a whack like Montana, fucking like a sheriff. We're gonna pull you over.
Almost
next
like
time you do this.
Consciously trying to.
If you do this, you know what I said to him? Nigga, we're already over. What are you talking about? They told me shut up. He looked at me like you want to kill me. I'm like, and my boy was like, "You're quiet. Load the window." I didn't want to load the window. I was like, "Corona, nigga, Corona." But I couldn't believe how much of a dick. Yeah, the cops in Flushing were. You know what I mean, it's like, bro, it's like we're doing construction. It's people over here. People are dying for coronavirus. Why are you gonna give me pull you over? Nigga, I'm over. Like,
right.
I've never been driving. But it's to say that there's. I want to say one thing to people all the time. I have nothing against police officers or authority. My father was a cop. My father was a cop in the 83rd precinct and the 2-3 precincts. Spanish Harlem, 83rd precinct, Bushwick. He was a great. He was a cop from 1962 to 1982, the worst years in New York City, and he was a great man.
Yep.
And So I grew up with cops. You know what I mean? A lot of my friends are cops, DEA, FBI, ATF. A lot of my friends growing up, marshals,
right,
the sheriffs. Like, look, it's always good to have people in both sides of the law, you mean?
Right.
And I'm just saying that a lot of people are like, fuck cops, for you. Don't write that shit on my page, because I know a whole bunch of cops.
Yep.
A lot of cops, some cops are just like people.
Yeah.
Some cops take it as a job, and some cops are dicks. Right?
No, so and we know. Listen, I mean, we have friends. We don't have to
have
say
good
their names.
And bad cops, so I'm
yeah,
saying, like,
that's ever... all we got to say. We have friends that we know. Yeah. You know what's up, and those they support us in their own ways, and that's all we got to say about that. So
yeah, good cops is good people, bad people. Good cops and bad cops. So not all cops are assholes. Just
right.
Remember, a cop can save your life one day. That's all.
Totally. Bye-bye. It was funny because I was just listening to one of your interviews recently, and you were telling the story.
Shout out to Sean Finley.
You were telling the story about how you guys drove in the station wagon to the synagogue really far.
Yeah.
When you were little. And I just crack up thinking about that because you said as soon as you got there, your dad was like, okay, let's just get out of here.
Yeah, my father's like, I was born Jewish. I don't need this shit.
Yeah, that's kind of my...
He's like, no, it's a nice synagogue. Let's get the fuck out of here. My father was so fucking amazing, like a hard-ass motherfucker.
That story made me smile, man, just because, like, again, it kind of, yeah, it's like that old school kind of, almost, it just reminds me of my dad, too. Like, the mom makes you go somewhere, and then you get dragged to this thing, and it's like,
yeah.
What is this?
I remember they went to Puerto Rico and let me in the house when I was 13, 14 years old. And it went to Puerto Rico for 2 days. And my mother came home and was like, that was the fucking worst. Your father's like, fucked everything up. But my father's like, I don't give a fuck, dude.
Yo, I love that story, man. So I just quick shout out, man, to all that. So, yo, we've got a really great show for you guys tonight. Two guests. This is going to be really a lot of fun. So I'm going to bring our first one in. And this one is a little bit of background. Is a really cool new young band called Concrete Dream. You've heard us plug them on the show a bunch of times. It's a new project that that's being developed by Danny and our other homeboy Donnie. And they're on E-Train Records, which is E's label. And we're gonna get Jeremiah in here, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about them. So just give us 1 second to dial them in, and we'll be right back. Hang on. All right, and we're back. The Corona Chronicles, episode number 4. So we're here with our first guest of the night. I want to welcome everyone, Jeremiah from Concrete Dream.
Yo, what's good?
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on?
Big, good, Jay.
How are you, man?
Good, man. Thank you for having me.
Man, thanks for joining us tonight. So, dude, for everyone who's not familiar, we were saying a little bit right before you joined on, Concrete Dream, obviously, if you've been listening to Diablos, then we've plugged the band. We're huge fans here over here. Our homeboy Dale did the video, which was amazing. The singles are sick, and you guys are kind of part of this whole like new wave of new emerging. I hate using the term new metal because it's kind of like weird, but
trap metal, trap rock.
We're going by trap metal because that's like where music is right now.
Right.
With like, you know, the fusion of where hip hop is, and where you know we're trying to still keep the metal scene alive, and we have that metalcore feel.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it does derive from new metal. It does derive from hardcore.
And
it does derive. It's crossover.
New metal to me is not a dirty word. I like new metal a lot. So it's not a dirty word to me. So everybody, welcome one more time, Jeremiah from Concrete Tree. So we're excited.
Jeremiah Mayhem.
Jeremiah, where are you hold up right now in the quarantine, man? Where are you hanging?
I'm out there in the field, man. I'm an essential worker, man. I'm out there delivering wine right now. I got a side job. And other than that, I'll be home chilling with my wife, writing music, relaxing.
Jersey,
you know, just mac until this shit's done. I'm in, you know, West New York, New Jersey, Hudson County all day. Is my hometown. I grew up Dirty Jersey my whole life.
Nice.
We grew up right here in Hudson County.
Before you say that, you know that Jeremiah knows Rap Bones?
No.
Oh, dude, Rap Bones was my roommate. Rap Bones lived with me in my projects when I was 14. My mother. You bring him on the show right now. Bring Rap Bones on the show right now. He squatted. Check this out. He squatted with us. He met me and my whole crew. Ended up sleeping over Grano's house. Grano's mom found him. Then I was like, nah, you know, I always had the cool mom. I love my mom. Big shout out to my mom, Vanessa. I love her. Amazing, amazing woman, Puerto Rican woman. Everybody's always chilling at my house. You know, right. We all smoke weed, chilling. You know, and then I was like, I brought home Rap Bones. I was like, Mom, this is Rap Bones, my friend. She was like, she fucking looks at Rap Bones. And she's like, all right. I'm like, she's like, you want to take a shower?
Yo, how fucked up is that?
My stepbrother.
Rap Bones is from Jersey originally.
I know. He's from Tom's River.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Rap Bones is a big bro. You understand. Rap Bones, when I was a kid, I met Rap Bones when I was 14. Yeah. All right. Rap Bones was the first person. He put me on to Subhumans. He's like the one that like showed me fucking Crown of Thorns. Like Rap Bones showed us all. He put on my whole hood to like, you know, hardcore, New York hardcore and punk and like all that shit. Like, you know, we had a fucking, we were like the Hudson County suburb punks. We were like right. A fucking, we formed a crew. He had us form a crew and shit. We'd walk around throwing cinder blocks on windows and spray painting cars. You know, he really fucking led us as a punk rock crew, man. God bless him, man. I can bring three people on this show. No, bring Rap Bones on this show. This is all on my mother's truth. Like, no lie.
Okay.
Like, this
we,
guy lived
we believe you, we believe
for
you.
Years. And then, you know, he went to his alter ego, and then now he's doing good. You know, so I love that. I saw him right after Black and Blue. I saw him again after we played the Black and Blue at Coney Island, baby, because he was there.
And you guys are playing again.
I can't wait. So,
ask the questions. Yeah. So
Jeremiah, I was just going to talk a little bit about. I always like to ask how people got into music and their journey into it. So you were saying you were obviously like introduced through hardcore by Rap Bones, which is not everyone can say that story. I mean, that's a pretty infamous character in the New York hardcore scene to be able to attach yourself to.
I was very lucky. One thing I will say, I was mad lucky to grow up around a lot of crazy ass OGs. Like, it started with Rap Bones, and then from Rap Bones, I ended up getting into music, and I was like, oh, I don't want to really skate and be a punk. I want to like take music seriously, so I started chilling in the studios, and then I started hanging out with the guys from Dragpipe. I don't know, you know, if you guys remember that band, Dragpipe.
I know
you know the singer, Jay Diablo.
I was in rehab in LA with Jay Diablo.
You told me that.
How crazy is that? He used to be in a band called STEM.
Yep.
That guy was crazy. He's a good musician, but makes beats too.
He does. He made beats for Capadonna from Wu-Tang and Ghostface. He made beats for a couple people from Wu-Tang. That's
Jay Diablo.
Yo, that's crazy.
Jay Diablo. And shout out to Gino and everybody from Dragpipe. Go listen to that album, seriously. They were signed to Interscope. They made one album. It's seriously one of my favorite albums of all time. Music for the Last Day of Your Life.
Awesome. So, Jeremiah, what was your journey like getting into performing like with your band? What was your first band like, and how did you get that bug? Was it just from going to shows and you're like, oh, man, I got it?
Like I was saying, I was lucky, like, from going from Rap Bones and coming to the New York hardcore scene. Like, I went to I saw Agnostic Front play at Wetlands. I saw the Da Vinci.
No, so did I. It was awesome.
I saw some of the last Wetland shows as a young kid.
Yep.
Yeah. That to me was like my first taste. And then I saw the hip hop battles there. Like
Wetlands shows.
Yeah, so Wetlands was like intense. It was like punk rock and then it was hip hop and it was everything. It was like, it was the fucking scene at one point. So I got that real taste. And then coming back home, meeting the guys from Dragpipe, watching them get signed, you know, sold out CBGBs three nights in a row. Yeah. They got signed to Interscope. I was there for all that. I was literally like watching all this.
So that put the bug in you, so to speak, a little bit to be like, all right, I got to try to.
You have no idea. And then what happened was I got fucked up with selling weed and get a bunch of fucked up shit. And then I went away to fucking juvenile hall for like 6 months. And I did mad fucking reflecting, mad crazy reflecting. I came out. Dragpipe had lost the deal. It was like a fucking disaster. It was like all sad and shit. It was like a fucking, you know, the whole. And then I ended up going to another studio and then. One day I was jamming with my boy Mikey and Gio. We were in a band called That Must Die. Okay. And this is real talk. We're jamming. We had a killer jam. Come outside in the hallway. And suddenly it's fucking Chris from El Nino, Lash from El Nino, Dave from El Nino, Jamie Josta, and fucking like four other people. They were recording One Nation Underground.
Nice.
At the 4th Street Studio. That's the, you know, the record that Jamie's on. Yep. And Matt were on that record. It was one of the last records they were on, Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And they were recording that in my studio. I had no idea. I'm just fucking down the hall doing my thing. And then, like, they fucking went crazy. They were like, yo, what the fuck? You kids are fucking ripping it right now. It's fucking 2 o'clock in the afternoon. What the fuck are you guys? And I was like, yeah, you know, we really trying to do this shit. So I got that fucking, you know, camaraderie from them and just seeing everybody around me, like between El Nino, 40 Below Summer, and then E-Town Concrete, like my best friend's fucking.
Yep. Yeah, that kind of whole Razor and Tie.
Yeah, it was just like, yep. It was just this monster of an era of music to me. It was just like, I had to do it, you know, like.
And the guy who told me about Jeremiah, first guy who said you got to listen to this guy rap, was Eddie Leeway.
Oh, no shit. All right, shout out Eddie, who we've had on the show.
Eddie Leeway putting Jeremiah on. Eddie was like, shout out to Laz also.
Yeah, shout out to Laz and Christian, all those guys.
Yeah, but Eddie Leeway hit me up. He was like, yo, whatever. And I said, all right. Because I said, I'm doing a band, and I'm looking for new acts. And he said, yo, I got this guy. He's a solo dude, but he has a band too. And I was like, all right, let me see what's up. Then one day I went to, I was in Queens, and I was at the, What's that club of Nicky Cam's club?
Blackthorn.
And all of a sudden, I see him and his boy, and I was like, yo, what's up, blah, blah. And we started talking. They came up to me, but he told me before he came up, they were scared of me. Like, you were like, I was like, yo, what's up, guys?
I was. That was so dope. I saw you at, that was the Agnostic Front show.
Yeah.
That's when I first met you in person. But before all that even happened, it was like, you know, it was been a real transition for me, like, you know, going from
a solo,
rapping to singing solo, you know. It was, and I've always been in bands. Like, I was a bass player for bands my whole life, like, you know, my whole career up until me pursuing rapping with White Henny, me losing the deal with White Henny, and then transitioning into like this phase of Concrete Dream.
Right.
And Eddie there through that whole thing, like Eddie literally saw me like about to fucking do all this big shit as White Henny and then lose that shit. And then boom, I'm in Concrete Dream now. And he witnessed that. And like, I wasn't even singing on the records. I wasn't singing at all. I was just rapping. I was barely screaming.
You're a dope rapper, bro.
Thank you, man. Thank
you. You're a dope singer. You have a dope style. And that's, and when I first heard him, I was like, yo, this kid, he's white and fucking Puerto Rican. He's fucking dope. He has a dope style. And I was like, yo, I believe in this kid.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the birth of Concrete Dream. And sort of that relationship, like Jeremiah, how did you get the band together? Like you were saying, you were used to being a solo person. So how did you get the band together? And then tell us a little bit about that journey, bringing it to the E-Train Records path. Because I think a lot of people would like to hear that, E-Train, especially like record. you said, like, you know, you were doing shit solo. And then that, you know, that you had kind of in your mindset said like, yo, this is going to be my thing. I'm building towards this. And the next thing you know, now you're in a band. So put that in a little bit of perspective for some of our listeners, man, because I think that people would love to hear that story.
Yes.
Fortunately, like, I was lucky that my drummer and my bass player were always rocking with me and White Henny. So, you know, White Henny always performed live with a band. Like, I never – White Henny only performed one time without the band, and that was at EO Dub, end of the week. Shout-outs to EO Dub, Big Zoo. Big ups to Nunzio. It was longest-running open mic in New York City.
I know Nunzio for a long time.
Oh, yeah. That's, seriously, they still going strong. But – going from that like phase and then always jamming with the band, it was kind of easy. So I had it going already, but it wasn't as intense as Concrete Dream. It was like a backup band to a rapper, you know, right. Like they're covering the songs. It's different. It's a different energy. You know, it wasn't as metal. It wasn't as hardcore. It was more laid back, like, you know, but it was still aggressive at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But then losing the guitar player that we were working with, Alex, big up to Alex, you know, just shit was going on. He couldn't play guitar no more. We lucked out with JFK because Meta, my bass player, was already working with JFK.
Meta's a dope bass player, bro.
No,
he's Cuban.
Meta's the one that.
Oh, shout out.
Yeah, he plays Cuban.
That's awesome. Yo,
shout out to everybody in Concrete Dream. The bass player, the Cuban Beef, Meta, the drummer, the Filipino, Juan Bang, and the
Juan's
Irish.
The dope Filipino JFK. Drummer. He's the dopest. Shout out Juan.
Shout out to JFK. Shout out to my DJ Dpreezy.
So Jeremiah, how did you end up linking up? How did the band end up coming together into the studio and linking up?
Like you were saying, well, we were already in the studio. We were already in Soundmore Studio with Eddie Leeway. He was there through that whole transition, so the band was already in there.
Cool.
And Eddie's like, "Yo, you should sing. Like, you should take this up. You got to sing in the hooks. Like, you got to. Nobody's gonna want to hear this shit." And also, Gordon,
is that Eddie Leeway and Rap Bones.
Dude,
yo, that's a pretty, like I said, man. Not a lot of people can say that. That's how they got into this whole thing.
Eddie literally sat there and he was like, "Yo, just." Sing what you feel, man. I was freestyling hooks in front of Eddie with the band jamming. Eddie's just there smoking cigarettes and Spider-Man stands like this. and he's just like listening to me.
Yeah, like
he wasn't like, I can't say he was vocal coaching me, but he was coaching me like he was. Like he was like, yo, you
he's one of the best singers in your hardcore.
Yeah,
yo,
no, he's
he is, man. And I listened to his records and I kind of was like, you know what, man? Like, and the same thing with J Diablo, like both of them, like, you don't gotta be like this boys to men type singer. If you're singing from the soul and you believe that shit and you really real and you the shit you're saying is real, people are gonna feel you. Yeah. Totally, man.
And especially on aggressive music too, it's like I almost think the raw and the passionate kind of realness works with the hard guitars and shit. Nobody really wants the too clean, you know?
No, sings, for sure.
His tone, he sings, reminds me of P.O.D.
Yeah, yeah.
Sonny's one of my, so one of my huge idols growing up, too.
He's a, pick up for Sonny. That dude can sing and he's a cool guy. So
he's amazing.
That's a good person to look up to.
Totally. He showed us a lot of love too when we opened up for POD. We opened up for POD twice and he showed us a lot of love. He watched us. He took pictures with us. He rocks the shirt and everything.
That's awesome. Picked
up to Sonny.
So when you guys
shout to Sonny,
this is what happened. So now Eddie Leeway and Gordon, his manager Gordon, who was also an Agnostic Front, big ups to Gordon.
Yep.
They took me to Drew Stone's took me and my wife to Drew Stone's documentary premiere at Gramercy Theater.
Yep.
Yes.
And my wife, my beautiful wife, she already knew Stormy.
I was on a panel.
He was on the panel. So, like, I wanted to go up to him that day and, like, kind of break bread. You know what I'm saying? Like, just before he even put the post out, like, yo, I'm looking for bands. I didn't even know about E-Train Records. I just wanted to go break bread with homie.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I knew I had Eddie Leeway there. I had the stain. I could have been like, yo, what up? And then I was just like, I'm nervous, man. It's too much time to be out right now. I was like, I'm nervous. What's it called? And then I was walking back home with Leeway and walking back home with Gordon. And originally, Concrete Dream was going to be called Trap Metal. Literally.
Oh, no, we were shit. Okay.
Literally, and I had the Korn logo flipped backwards. It was going to be this whole shit. And then Gordon
Concrete Dream, much better for a name for a band, for sure.
listen to this story. Listen to the story. And like after that, like after watching that documentary, like seriously, it was a dope documentary. Drew Stone did a magnificent job. Everybody was deep. It hit me deep because like I'm still like, you know, I wasn't there living it with y'all in the 80s and really living the fucking when real, like Eddie Leeway would say, when the real New York hardcore shit was real. So it's like, and he even said in a documentary, you know what I mean? He's like, let's start it off with New York hardcore died in the 80s, you know, whatever. That's Eddie, you know. But it's like, I wasn't there. So watching that was really nostalgic to me and it really like brought this energy to me. Yeah, inspiration. It was insane to me. It was like, yo, this is real. Like, I'm more than just some trap shit. Like, you know, Gordon's right. Gordon was like, you're going to change. Your music's going to change. You don't want to label yourself as being one style.
Yeah.
And he was. And Eddie was right there. My girl was right there. And I was like, wow, you know. So the next day, I was just walking my dog, you know, kicking the shit, whatever, staring at the floor, staring at the concrete. Like, you know, our whole life, we just fucking walk concrete floor, you know, on some real shit. And then E-Town Concrete's literally one of my, like, big favorite bands.
I love E-Town Concrete.
Being from Jersey and being from hip-hop and metal. Big shout out to Ant Money, like absolutely big shout out to Ant Money, and like just fighting for this dream. Like seriously, I've been fighting for this dream since I was 13. I've been rehearsing in studios since I was 14 years old in New Jersey. Like this is real. So I was like, yo, I'm still doing this shit. I'm 30 years old. You know, we live in this dream. We're still on this fucking concrete dream.
That's cool.
And then I called guys. I called all the guys right away. Right away, I Googled it first. Before I call the guys, I'm like...
just to make sure it's not taken or whatever.
So I don't sound like an asshole. And then it comes up, only thing that has is a country singer has a song called Concrete Dream.
Yeah, perfect.
Some country song.
So, when you and Donnie heard the demos, what did you think? Were you like...
I heard this shit, and I was like, this shit is dope.
What was the first song you heard from them? Do you remember?
Catch 22.
Catch 22.
One song.
I was like, yo, I listened to it, and it was, and I was like, yo, you guys gotta change it. You gotta change it to like hook, the chorus, hook.
We built it up.
They had it, but wasn't it that Donnie was like, yo, Donnie is, we'll go in there and we'll switch this up. I was like, Donnie, the kids, when you talk to people, remember, it's their music. When people tell me about my music.
Yeah, no, you gotta treat everybody.
I gotta talk nice, but Donnie is like, he's like the Gestapo in the studio.
Yo, he's brutal.
Straight business.
Don is brutal.
I'm like, yeah, I'm rooting for the bad guy. He's like, no.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. Right?
He's shitting all over us.
You mean? Like, there's some things you need to talk to Donnie that you wouldn't want to talk to me about.
Right.
If you want to talk about touring and this stories and that, talk to me. If you want to talk about statistics and money, I don't know shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's why I lucked out with two of the best managers in the business, man. I got the yin and yang.
All the bases are covered. Yeah, for sure. So, Jeremiah,
Danny put out a post. Long story short, Danny put out a post saying, yo, I got E-Train Records. I'm looking for any rap metal bands. I was like, what the fuck? Like, literally, it was 2 days later.
Yeah,
it was
literally planets aligned.
Eddie Leeway's right there smoking cigarettes, chilling in the room. And then I was like, yo, should I send my music to him? Is it cool? And he's like, hell yeah, send my music. Send it over. I sent it over. Literally, 24 hours later, Danny calls me. I get some weird number. And I see his government name on my phone. I didn't know his government name. And I'm like, he's like, is this your mind? I'm like, what? And he's like, what's up? And I'm like, oh man. I'm like, oh shit. What's up, Mr. Diablo? And I'm like, I'm fucking shook. And he was like, my business partner's flying out from LA tomorrow. We're going to meet you in the city. What time do you want to meet? Like that. Boom.
I want to tell you something that made me want to work with his kids. First of all, he's very charismatic. So also, I call him the Trap Axl Rose because he has long hair. And another thing, you know, all the guys in this band have jobs that financially fucking fit. So he's like, do the bands. He's like, do this. They're like, oh, we have no money. These guys all work together and we'll pay for the thing. I never had Magic Scarhan that had Magic Scarhan had money. Like, imagine they work like these guys, Puerto Rican money. These guys never know what works.
The work ethic
of fucking Concrete Dream of Jeremiah and all his band is so fucking amazing that they are going to go far. It's another thing I'm trying to tell you. Not E-Train Records, but I told these guys, if they get a big deal and a major label wants to sign them, sign the major label. Don't fucking, I'm not going to be sound.
No. I mean, everybody grows, especially, listen, the thing
I
is.
I tell them that they have to grow.
Everybody grows.
I'm trying to do my own career. How the fuck am I going to do someone else's career? You understand?
No,
I'll bring you to this level, always help you, but they deserve to be on a fucking major label.
Well, that's the thing.
All you major labels out there, give me a call.
Let's talk before we let Jeremiah go. I want to plug the video that you did with our good friend Dale, Rage Rastaghini. Shout out to Dale.
Hyro the Hero.
Jeremiah, tell us a little bit about that single. Tell the fans about the video working with Rage, because that video was sick, man.
No, yeah. Seriously.
That was fucking amazing.
No, yeah.
No, seriously, it was a big production. It's a shame you weren't there. It was intense.
Tell who's on it in the remix. Tell Hyro the Hero.
We got Hyro. Well, let me tell you the story. So Dale got the song, loved the song. Right away, he sends a song to Hyro. Hyro's like, this shit is crazy. I'm getting on it. He records the verse at the end, on the breakdown, sends it back to me. I'm like, this shit is hot. Don talks to his manager, and then now the label was holding it for a while, Sony Records. And then Sony Records was like, all right, this shit is hot. Clear it. And then fucking Dale was able to shoot the video. And we fucking shot it in West New York, New Jersey.
Yep.
We had about, 150 kids there.
It was amazing.
It was a packed house. We had my boy VB3 Lunch, Chef Coletti, he catered the event. It was intense, man. Seriously, working with Rage, it was like seriously being on a movie set. We had a $75,000 camera. Big ups to Steve Romano for that, the DP on the set. Big ups to Don Capri, assistant director.
Did you notice too, Jeremiah, a difference in the band perception when you guys released a video like that? Because it premiered on Revolver. It came out real big all around. So did you notice that there was just a little bit of a jump right away where you were like, oh shit, and people started paying a little bit more attention?
We got a huge jump with a deal. We got the stamp, like, not for nothing. Ever since we dropped that video, like the week later, I was opening up for POD and Nonpoint.
Yep.
And then once, but twice. Yeah. And no local band travels like that between states.
Right.
So we're doing things that no local band's really doing. You know what I'm saying?
That's awesome.
You know what I mean? So, that came from Dale. And it wasn't even that it came from Dale necessarily. It just came from
That it just stain. Organically happens from growing out of that, the music that we're all a part of.
Dale does so much.
Yeah, we loved
Dale Rage Nation films.
We love Dale here so much. He was our
Love you, Dale.
He's helping Concrete Dream as we speak. He's probably going to shoot our next video. He's a man. He's been God.
He's the best, man, family. Well,
he really is. And he puts in that work.
Awesome, Jeremiah. Well, listen, we're going to let you go real quick. Give everybody links to where can they listen to Concrete Dream,
everybody, Jeremiah, talk to me.
Tell them that E-Train's the new Death Row.
Chainsmokers were the new Death Row, straight up. And you, the new Death Row.
Jeremiah, where can everybody hear Concrete Dream music? Obviously on all streaming platforms, but where can we find you on Instagram?
The new thing for us, and we're promoting it heavy. We have a beautiful.com right now. Seriously, it's a fucking amazing fucking thing to go to. ConcreteDreamBand.com.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. And we'll show that in our
YouTube. All your videos.
Everything's there. We got the videos. We got the Instagrams. We got the Instaspans. We got the Twitter. We got the YouTube. You go there. Everything's there. ConcreteDreamBand.com. Buy our merch.
Yeah.
The merch is there. We got three shirts. We got designs. We got masks, condoms. Get on that shit.
Concrete Dream, baby.
That's awesome. Well, yo, Jeremiah, thank you so much for stopping by.
Yo, Jeremiah, I love you, brother.
Love you too, man.
We're going to have you come in when we get back into our regular routine. We're going to have you come into the studio.
I got to bring the band.
And talk a little bit more about your relationship with E-Train and everything we have going on. But we are trying to involve all our friends in this time at being at home and
thank you,
everybody how people are staying active, especially bands like you guys who are new and things like that. And
real quick, everybody, please tune in this Saturday to the Concrete Dream Facebook. We're going live with the singer from Fire from the Gods, the singer from Siler, Danny Diablo himself,
me,
Christian from El Nino, okay, the singer from Dropout Kings, the singer
from Shifty
from Crazy Town. I mean, it's going to be a live Zoom conversation about hip hop, the way hip hop fused your metal from hardcore to trap to new metal, on where it was, where it came from, and where it's going. So check that out. Please sure to check that out.
Awesome. We'll put links for all that stuff in our description. So, Jeremiah, thank you so much for joining us on Corona Chronicles.
Jeremiah, I love you, little brother.
And we will talk to you
soon,
man.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much.
Peace.
All right, guys, we are back on the Corona Chronicles, episode number 4. It is my pleasure to welcome the one and only Billy Biohazard.
The one and only.
What up, Billy?
Dude, thank you so much for checking in with us, Billy. We're so excited to have you on.
Good to see you guys, man. Virtually.
Billy, I love you, bro.
You too, brother. It's been too long.
Oh, Billy, let's start off with how are you holding up with all this craziness, man? What's been going on?
I'm great, dude. I'm a fucking survivor. We all are.
Yeah.
I use this time. Hey, bud, please. My son's behind the camera making faces. <Don't stop me. laughs> You know what? Like one of the things right away, I said to myself, I'm going to use this time to better myself, to do something different that I never had time for.
Awesome.
One of them spent a little bit more time with my boy, but
that's awesome. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But, so I learned some new skills, some new trades, and still doing music and kicking ass. I got like 4 records on the burner and, it's going good.
Yeah, man. I want to actually, let's start off with talking about the first thing. I think it might be the most recent thing you did, which was your solo record, right? On Bridge 9, called Feed the Fire. Right. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Billy? Because that record was really great, man. And I know you teamed up with a friend of ours, Chris Wren, who's awesome at Bridge 9. So tell us a little bit about that record and sort of what made you want to do that and that whole journey.
Chris, fucking great, dude. We all know how dope fucking Bridge 9 was. I always want to do something with those guys, and I'll be straight up.
Bridge 9 alum between the three of us. All of us have had releases on Bridge 9, which is pretty cool.
Me too, right?
Yeah. You had a Crown of Thorns at the distance and Billy Bio.
I heard Chris is putting out the new trap record.
Oh, man.
So I had, I always wanted to work with Chris, and I always respected everything that he did. I love his ethic and all the bands that came out in Bridge 9. But straight up, fucking Edwin was always a hater, man.
Yeah.
He was always like, why would we do a step? He'd be like, what are we going to take a step backwards for? Fucking, it's stupid. I'm like, it's not a step back, which is what we're from, dude. Right. It's our shit. And looking back, man, I really think that if we would have done more shit that I wanted to do, it would have salvaged a lot of our, you know, early era where we split Roadrunner and independent labels and went to major labels.
Right.
And caught a lot of flack for that shit. But regardless, so I got a chance to do it. I did a solo record. Now I have a whole new career.
That's just
Billy.
Hard, bro. That's
yeah,
a
that
good
record,
record
is
man.
Hard.
A real good record.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, especially the first single too. Was cool because I'm not sure if I'll be honest. I'm not sure what I expected, and when I got to hear it, man, it was like exactly what I thought it should be. If that makes sense, you know, it was like a very traditional, like hardcore rooted, like a lot of like anthem-ish type of lyrics. Man, the single was awesome. The video was really hot. It was really cool.
Yo,
to see
the
that come
video
out.
Was fucking weird. The weird crazy.
Yo,
thing,
the video was
every
awesome.
Point of view, it was like it's like you can go all around and stuff. I was like, what the fuck?
And oh, that was a 360 video.
You know who likes that record and who hates everything? Paul Bearer. He loves that record.
How's he doing? I haven't seen him in a long time.
It's ugly and miserable.
Good. He's good. Great. He was out here playing with I'm producing the new Count Time record, and he was on tour with those guys. I didn't make it. I was on tour, but I wanted to hang out with him.
No, but he's still the same.
Yeah, I know. That's good.
So, that's Billy, good. Continue talking a little bit about the Feed the Fire album. So, how did that come together? Was that something that you'd always been working on and had wanted to do, or was that just like growing out of coming out of that Power Flow album cycle? Or how did you decide to do that?
You know what? Looking back, Jay, now I look at it like I was always a solo artist. I always write my shit. Yeah. I brought my songs into Biohazard, and as much as I love Biohazard and I love the band vibe, but it was always like I would step up and bring a song in, Punishment, for example, whatever. I would bring the song in, and then we would put our shit together and make it a band song, but I was always the guy to bring my shit completely finished. I have demos of like Punishment, Tales from the Hard Side, songs completely done, acoustic version of What Makes Us Tick.
That's awesome. Like,
But I like the way a band works. I like that fucking tension. I love it when Bobby and I get at it. We go face to face. No, man, that fucking sucks. No, yours sucks. Because out of that tension, it comes great shit. And I like that. But I'll tell you this, man. Getting a chance to have my music and my shit come to fruition in full light without having somebody else putting their influence on, even though I like it. When other, you know, I mean, I love playing with Bobby and Danny and shit, but I like having my shit be the way I intended.
Right.
It's your creation. It's your creation. Yeah. I definitely understand that.
You know what? You're a painter, Danny. You don't have somebody, like when you fucking paint something, you don't invite your boys over and give them a paintbrush and paint and say, go ahead, change what you want.
No, I don't want them even in the room. I don't want no one in the room.
Exactly.
even the studio, I don't want them in the room.
Right.
So the same shit. So I got a lot of great energy. I'm on record number two now. It's almost done. And
give me a guest vocal spot, bro.
I would fucking love to, bro.
Yeah, we gotta make
that. I'm there. I'm flying right out there and do it right in the studio. Fuck that! Fuck the studio! I'm going to your studio.
So,
fuck
Billy,
quarantine.
With Feed the Fire, did you produced all the songs yourself? And that, is that what you're doing with this second record too? Or are you bringing in some other people, or what's the approach on the second record?
It's just the same stuff. I have like, you know, I just got back from the studio. I was there all day, and it's my fucking cave, my creative cave. I just hang out there. There's no windows. It's the exact same vibe every day, whether you're there at 4 a.m. or 4 p.m. It looks the same. So that way the energy is not.
It's amazing.
I love that. Yeah.
And then so I work with Tui Madsen. He mixes my stuff.
Oh, yeah. He does an amazing job.
Yeah. He's a great fucking guy. So we're working on this new record. And it's supposed to come out in October, but I think we're. Shit's a little fucked up right now. Yeah. So, we'll see.
So Billy, obviously, like this whole craziness with the coronavirus and shit obviously affected all your touring. You guys must have had a bunch of stuff planned, right? That's obviously maybe being pushed back. Is there anything you could talk about that was maybe in the works, either on your solo stuff or even the Power Flow stuff?
Yeah, we did. Seth and I have been working on a new Power Flow for a while. We're almost done.
That's just hard.
Yo,
bro,
that record's hard.
Yo, Sen Dog is one of the coolest guys in the world. Shout out to Sen Dog. Your bass player is cool as fuck, too. Chris is great.
Thank you, brother.
It's a great band, man. It's hard as fuck.
Hard. Great lineup.
Yeah, it's good shit.
Yeah, great the new lineup. Great lineup of people in that band. Sorry, Billy. Go ahead.
The new record, the new Power Flow record's a lot harder than the first record. A lot more metal. Sen is a fucking beast. I mean, we know him as Cypress Hill, but he's a fucking metalhead, man.
He's a beast.
When we were doing the first record, we'd be in the studio, and I'm a big fucking Cypress Hill fan. He's like, we've been big Cypress Hill fans for your kids.
Yeah, me too.
So to be in a band with him, and even though we're homies, but I'm like, no. I'm trying to make it. Let's make it more like you guys. Make it more groovy. And he's like, no. Make it more like your shit. Yeah, he likes.
What was the band that he was in? A band before that was hard too.
SX10.
That was hard too. That was bad punk rock.
Billy, can you tell us a little bit about how Power Flow came together? Because I think on the surface it wouldn't seem like a group of people that would come together for a record, but then when you hear it and you know the history between you guys and Cypress Hill, like you were saying, and just your history with hip hop, really in general with the hip hop community and stuff, how did that come together? The Power Flow story, like I want to hear about how you guys linked up and decided to do a band.
It's a funny story, man. The band was a band, before we finished the record, we weren't even a band. So there was just a bunch of dudes that got together. Sen would come to the studio. First off, it was him and Roy. Roy from Downset. He's not
shout
in the band.
Shout out to Roy.
Shout out to Roy.
But they came to me in the studio, and I was working on a Biohazard record at the time, and we just split up. We had some fallout with Scott, and I came back, and I was like, man, you know what? Now's the fucking time. I'm doing my fucking solo shit. I'm going to do this shit. So Sen comes in the studio, and he's like, all right, we got this new thing going on. You want to get down with it? And I'm like, you know, we just had a baby. I don't want to leave and go sit in a van for something new. If I'm going to leave my family, I want to go and do my own shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm working the solo thing. I said, but if you want, I like the music. I'm always down to work with you. So I'll produce your record. I'll write some songs for you if you want. And that's how it started. So I wrote a bunch of songs. And that was the beginning of the band. And then there was no name. There was nobody. It was just Sen and I after Friday, Sunday night football, he'd show up the studio at fucking 9 p.m. bring a couple buddies, his fucking biker crew. And then we just write songs. We work on music and drink a bunch of beers. And after like 2 or 3 months, we had a bunch of songs.
That's
and
awesome.
Then, and then we ended up recording the record.
Yo. Who's the drummer?
So, Fernando, dude.
Yeah, that, who is that guy?
So, he
that
was
dude,
with...
Oh, that dude plays some hard shit, bro.
He's fucking hard shit, man. Him and I had a band together called Endra from Brazil.
Right.
He was he's a fucking badass drummer. He's a hardcore kid from Sao Paulo in a band called... the band was called Treta. It's like hate means I think it means hate. That's They're awesome. Like the hardcore dudes. Like it's like the heart of the hard in fucking Sao Paulo. Yeah. Anyways, him and I've been friends for like 20 years, and we had a band together. So then we were looking for a drummer, and Roy asked me, "What do you think about Fernando?" I'm like, "He's a fucking killer drummer, man.
Yeah, he's a dope drummer.
Yeah, he is a really good drummer."
So we brought him in. We taught him the songs. He learns real quick. Yeah. He learned them on the spot because I don't give my music. I don't email nobody anything. my drummers play, they listen to the song, we jam it, and they record it. They don't spell it. So Fernando did this shit on the spot. We're in the studio, and we finished tracking the record, and Fernando says to me in Portuguese, he's like, hey, man, what do you think? Should we all get along great? We're having a good time. Let's make it a band. I'm like, yeah, fucking awesome.
That's awesome.
And then we thought, all right, let's do it. We turned around. We're just, fuck, everybody's partying. Yeah. And Sen's like, I'm fooling around with this idea. Roy came up with this name, Power Flow. It's the way I spit over the fucking hard riffs. What
yo,
do you think?
That's a hard name, man.
Yo, listen, I'm just happy that you could do something with Sen Dog and people. when I saw the video, it's like with the car behind him, he's rapping. This shit it's dark.
Well, it's that's dark, what I'm saying. Dude. It was so dark. Cool as a fan. Like, obviously, I'm a generation, like two generations removed from Billy, and a generation even, you know, younger. So growing up,
I ain't that old.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, you know, from
down there,
but watching, you know, like
37.
Watching Cypress Hill and Biohazard come together, especially because, you know, the Judgment Night soundtrack and all those things, and then seeing it come together and it being good was so fucking cool. And it's hard, and it's cool. So it's cool to hear you guys working on a second record, because we want to.
I want to tell you something right now.
Yeah, it's good.
A lot of bands, just will say, a lot of bands try to do the rap rock shit and it sucks. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, no, yeah. Seriously, that's why I don't like. But you guys were like the way I do my shit, the way you do shit, it comes natural. It comes from a hard place, and we show it. But a lot of these bands, and they're big, and they're trying to shit. Shit's corny, you know what I mean? Well, but your shit's hard, it's real, and that's why I love it, man. Yeah, that's what I love.
I've seen some fucking whack bands that we brought up. but there's some real good ones. Your boys are fucking good, bro. We're gonna team up with them.
We just had them on. We just had them on before we interviewed you. So that Jeremiah is the other guest with you on this episode.
Cool, man. They got some cool shit going on. Who did that record?
Some kid from another band. He does all those rock bands, but from Pennsylvania. But the first stuff, Donnie produced the first stuff for them. So
yeah.
It was good. Last El Nino helped him out.
Oh, nice. Perfect. He's a good dude.
Yo, and Billy, you guys toured heavy on that Powerflow album cycle. I mean, you guys were everywhere on that record, right? Seemed like you guys toured That was like old school style touring on that one.
Fucking, and people, yo, to see like, you know, living a lot of years in buses, and especially the Send Dog. From going to fucking jet planes and buses to a fucking van, so he keeps it real, man. It's in the heart.
Yeah,
and it was cool, man. We had a lot of crazy times. It was a little bit like it was in the early days of Biohazard.
Awesome.
Like,
yeah, you know, I miss those days.
Yeah, kept it real. And then now we're on record number two, so we're all psyched about that. But the tour plans, what's cool? We all had touring plans. So there's a lot of Powerful stuff and a lot of Billy Bio shit. But like everybody, you can't complain about it. You know, we're happy shit's getting it's opening back up now. So we've locked ourselves in the studio and just finishing the records.
Do you think that's the record we'll see before the end of this year, or maybe?
Billy Bio's coming first.
Okay.
Because they're dropping the Cypress Hill record in the fall. That was the plan.
Okay.
And then the new Powerflow will be out early next year.
That's awesome, man. I'm really looking forward to that.
Billy, we got a tour. Scarhead and fucking Powerflow. That'll be totally insane.
I'm down, dude. I'm down.
I'm down.
you know you're one of my favorite New Yorkers, bro.
And I love you, bro. You know I love
you. Even though
bro.
You're from Queens.
Yo, bro, I'm telling you.
I know. I miss New York. I miss New York, man. Yo, you should have been in the... We just did a great tour in Europe for a Persistence tour.
That was a great lineup. Oh,
what a lineup, man.
That was crazy, right?
Yeah. Good time. The last big tour before shit shut down.
Yeah. Well, yep. I'm happy you're getting those tours, man. Keep touring. Make money. Sell that merch. Fucking make that money, bro. We all have families and kids and fucking bills. You mean? And we have. I'm happy the kids love to come to shows now. You mean?
Yeah.
So good.
Well, cool. Yeah.
It's great to see
MAD.
Different generations. Yeah, MAD keeps it fucking good, man. Those dudes, since day one, I love them.
We got to do one of those Persistence tours back in 2006, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. I mean, just going over there, the way that our music and stuff is treated over there is like, I mean, it was like nothing I'd ever seen. So it was very cool.
They do a really cool thing. I love the family vibe. Everybody together.
Yeah.
No bullshit. You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I see some people try to pull some rock star shit in the past.
I see a lot of people do that.
I ain't gonna say no names, but it was a Biohazard and Agnostic Front hate breach for a long time ago. Some pretty funny shit went down.
So it's funny because for people who don't know, I mean, you guys go back fucking way, way, way back. I mean, he's like, talk a little bit about your history with Billy touring together.
I went, I went on a tour with Sick and Roll and Biohazard. And it was the craziest. I love Biohazard. I used to go to all the shows with Lamore's.
Yep.
Or even Phoebe's. And I always used to see Billy all the time. Hey, what's up, guy? But we went on tour. And the Sick and Roll and Biohazard, I must have gotten to like 30 fights in 30 nights.
Every day. Every day there was a fight. He's just beating some kid down. That's where you started your fame. That's where your fame started.
Tour. First time out of Queens.
It was the best. It was one of the best fucking memories, man. I swear. That tour, fucking. And
Bobby and Danny, loved them.
Oh, yeah. Shout out Bobby. He's
so good. Shout out Bobby and Danny.
Hey, Billy, yep. So going back to those early days, man, what was that like for you guys coming out of, like, the hardcore scene and then just becoming, like, that trajectory to becoming, like, on MTV? I mean, those videos are synonymous. Me and my brother would stay up. I've talked about your videos so many times on this podcast about just how influential they were on my brother.
Amazing.
And I and watching. Like, what's that like, man? I mean, you guys, like you said, you're just coming out of our scene to be at the forefront of something like that. Do you mind talking a little bit about that sort of story back then and that vibe coming out of that?
Yeah, I mean... I mean, Ezek was there, like that Punishment video. These our brothers from New York.
Yes.
Those dudes fucking helped put us on the map with that. That's some great scenery. Saab, rest in peace. So many brothers. Boss and Mike.
That video is one of the coolest things, man. Like I said, man, me and my brother would watch that all the time. And I bug out now that I'm sitting here. I do a show with Ezek, and you're on here, and it's like, you know, like I'll send a screenshot of this to my brother, and we'll like laugh about it. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was. Remember, I was a kid too, so. I was seeing Biohazard. I would go to, like, black kids with CBGBs won't leave CBGBs. I would go to me, Hoya, and MQ would go Lamore's, and she would be like, yo. And we'd be like, one day we're fucking with them. We're like, yo, I saw my cab driver today with a Biohazard shirt. You niggas have hey, you know, these guys, everyone had a Biohazard shirt. There'd be Mexicans and white guys, and everyone. Yeah. No matter where you went in New York City, every sanitation workers, everyone had a Biohazard shirt.
Yeah, oh.
It was the greatest logo. This is crazy. I'm a big Carnivore fan. I love Carnivore. Love Type O Negative. And Biohazard was me when Carnivore left off. And it was like so hard. The first album, the Canadian one. The bass. It was simple, but it was like, It moved me. There was a groove. You know how Slayer, Out to Heaven had a groove?
Yep.
Biohazard always had a groove. And no band could open up a Slayer and make any noise. Biohazard opened up a Slayer and people would go off Biohazard.
Yep.
That was a crazy tour.
That was fucking amazing. You guys killed it. I was there. I was at every show. I was a fan. I was happy.
I hated my
life in high school. I love Biohazard.
What was the club? What was the club in Long Island?
Sundance.
Like, remember that show with Slayer? It was Biohazard, White Zombie, Slayer.
Yes.
White Zombie opened up the show, and the dude, his name was Frank Cariola. He would sold out club. After fucking White Zombie played, he would let people go outside and smoke, cool off and smoke some cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then he would let new people in the front, and he wouldn't let the people out.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Back and pay again. He recycled that club like 3 or 4 times that night. He was fucking killing.
Yeah, that was crazy. That's some Long Island shit.
That was crazy.
Oh, man, Billy.
Back with Archie.
Rest in peace, RGSIB. Oh, man. And then it was just a quick... Listen, back then, to watch all that happen in front of my face, and the Beavers and Butthead, and all that fucking crazy shit, and Biohazard was on that. Yo, Biohazard was so big. And you know what? The records were great. And then me and Puerto Rican Mike did a song. We went down to Billy's studio by the Brooklyn Bridge, and we did one of the songs. Then fucking 9/11 happened.
Oh.
Right?
That was crazy. That record came out September 11th.
Oh. Yep. That's what I'm saying. How crazy is that? I was like, yeah, I'm on the record. Off the 9/11.
Paul.
The guy's like, no, he's like, no.
as you would call it, the hardcore curse, right?
You have no curse. Anyone involved in this, they almost make it Mayday. But, yo, I had Puerto Rican Mike in the studio. Billy couldn't stop laughing. Mike smiles. That was funny shit.
Yeah, no, he's wild as hell. As we've talked about him before numerous times, man. It's crazy. So Billy, talking about the videos and stuff, like, again, what was that like just being on tour in middle America, you know, where MTV and Beavis and Butt and all that was like?
The sold-out shows. Sycamore Wild has a sold-out.
It was I got to say, I didn't like how the people that were started to follow us weren't from the hardcore scene. That always bothered me. I'm like, wait a minute. These people don't know what the fuck we're about. They like us because it was a butthead. I'm not shaking a stick at the fame.
No,
I mean,
no,
it was
of course.
No, I'm saying.
And I think I saw before I could put my finger on it. I was like, and Bobby and I talked about it too. Like, the fact that people who were liking us because of Beavis and Butthead, I'm like, they don't know what we're really about.
Right.
They don't know what the hardcore. They don't know where we're from. Just because MTV plays this, they were liking us. It was cool, but it hurt us in the long run. That's why bands like fucking Agnostic Front, Sick of It All, H2O, everybody that's fucking kept it real for so long, they still have the same fucking people that love them since day one. They never fucking, you know what I mean? And we never sold out, but it was fucking, it was kind of almost like the media blew us up to a point where it seemed like we changed. We didn't change.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And
we didn't do anything different.
I would say what's cool now over the past, I would say like probably 10 or so years, is seeing the like newer kids kind of, I don't want to say mimic Biohazard because that sounds bad, but how heavily influenced kids are by Biohazard in the hardcore scene. And it's cool. And it's like, it's awesome because, again, coming from dudes like me and E, where Biohazard was always cool to us, it's like you said, it got out of this way, you know, where it was not really from our scene, to now come back to our scene and seeing the kids really embrace it again and discovering those records, like, you know, that, you know, maybe people weren't listening to right off the rip that now they're rediscovering again and stuff. And it's cool because a lot of that has to do with streaming and Biohazard being so available to kids to listen to, dude, putting out quality content like those videos. I think too, people seeing Billy, how cool your career trajectory has continued from the band too, man, because a lot of people do cool shit and they don't really stay in that realm. So to see that you've kind of still done stuff like the Power Flow thing, your solo record on Bridge 9, you know, kind of it's kept it very cool, man. I got to say, as a fan, you know.
Thank you, brother. But I think the thing, that's why when Evan split from the band, like early, like 2011, I think
we
were working
on a record. I'm going to ask you this. You can answer that. What was that about?
You know as well as I do. I think he quit Biohazard way before he physically left the band. He was going through some personal shit, and that's his business. But we were at a point where we got back together with Bobby, and it was like the fire was back. I was like, "Holy, this is fucking great!"
Yeah,
we had a great run. We had a great time. The shows were fucking awesome. We got along great. Bobby was clean and sober. Suddenly, it was like Biohazard all over again. And then Evan started to drift apart, and he was back to his shit. And he went through some shit, personal shit, that it got to a point where he just fucking quit. And I think he quit thinking we would be like, we need you, without you we're nothing. And we were like, good riddance. You know, we'll figure out a way. We love this. We got captured this fucking eye of the tiger, and that fire was back in the band when our hearts and soul. So we got this dude, Scott Roberts. He came in. He loved what we were doing.
Yeah, he sounded exactly like him.
Yeah.
And shit started to turn around. We did a new record. We toured a lot.
Yeah.
And spent a lot of time on the road. And it was kind of like things started to look better for the band. And we kept it going. We started working on a new record. And then Scott was more into Oi than he was hardcore. Wasn't into doing what we were doing. And he just split. You know, we got a big fallout. But Evan, you know, I wish him well. I got, you know, no desire to talk to the dude. But I have no ill will for nobody, you know.
All I have to say, I got old school Rickenbacker, and I know the Biohazard songs. That's all I have to say.
That would be a good. That would be a good.
Yeah.
That would be even for one show. You know,
you know who called us up?
No, I'm trying to get crazy.
That would be awesome. But you know who's be fun? This is funny. You're gonna get a kick out of this. In 5 minutes, as soon as word got out that Evan was out, Harley called up.
Oh, That's a good
one. No, but you know what? He's a dope ass bass player.
He's great. I thought you said
yo, Hoya called up.
Hoya would be great too.
Hoya would be all right, right? Yeah.
So we're still doing it. We'll see. We'll try to get, you know, we're trying to find the right guy. When the right person falls in front of us at the right time, it'll work.
All right, so there you heard it. If anybody who listens to Diablo's Den that's worthy, you could send a message through us and we'll get it through Billy. But you gotta get through me and you first to see if it's good. So hey Billy, can I ask you a quick question too about your memories of the Judgment soundtrack? Just because again, that was such a cool collaboration back in the day, and it seems like, again, one of those things that on paper people would be like, what the fuck is this? But it's executed so well. Can you tell me a little bit about what your memories are with that and kind of your track coming together and a little bit about that?
Mike Schnapp came up with that, right?
Yeah, Mike Schnapp and this guy, Happy Walters.
Happy Walters, holy shit, yeah.
So I did a song with Onyx called Slam. I did like a remix thing that we did the visual for, remember? Yep. And then that relationship that we formed with Onyx from that came up again to work together on Judgment Night. And the Judgment Night, the movie's not that great, but the soundtrack.
No, the soundtrack has outlived that movie by 10
points. Peter Green.
Yeah,
shout out to Peter Green.
Yeah, shout out to Peter Green.
Peter Green.
And Everlast.
Yep. And so the way everybody mixed their shit together was fucking really unique. There's not one song that's like anything else on that record. Everybody put together their own shit in a different way. So it was a fucking very innovative record at the time. I don't think it got the fucking right light that
it
deserved.
Did it go gold?
It's platinum, brother. Fucking awesome.
That's awesome.
Joe Fatal's on the album, too. Joe Fatal's on the album.
Shout out Joe Fatal.
Right. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Platinum.
Oh, who was Joe with?
Is Joe Fatal mixed? I forgot who.
No, the band is I forget. It's like the one that wasn't. I'll have to plug it in.
Not De La Soul. No, what do you do?
It was Joe Fatal, and the band. I totally forgot. Fuck, I should call him.
Hold on.
Where is it, Joe Fatal? He's looking like the Jamie's.
He's like, where's my platinum record?
He was in the one Therapy and Fatal, track 10, Come and Die was his.
Yeah. Yep.
So go ahead, Billy. So you were just saying, so that came together out of the relationship with you and Onyx.
Yeah, and then I don't think that that record didn't get the light that it did later the time. It stood the test of time. And I just did an interview with Rolling Stone. It's like a 20-year anniversary or something like that.
Oh yeah, I read that. That's great.
It was like an innovative, never done before thing. And after that, I remember that we did a Black Sabbath cover record called Nativity Black, which would be cool. So people started putting together more big compilations off of those kind of things because of the success, and it was good. It worked. Yeah, we did a video for that with Drew Stone, and that was pretty fucking badass. Ezak, the fucking Drew Stone one. Oh yeah. You guys have to have a comedy show, the two of you.
Yeah. He's out of his mind. I love him. He's just out of his fucking mind.
That episode
was like, yo, Drew Stone was my buddy. Then when the thing came out, he didn't want to like talk shit about nobody. He's like, I was like, fucking laugh, Drew Stone. You were talking shit 5 minutes before.
I know. No, he's trying to be all cool. It's because he's doing it from his house with his father. That's why. He's a famous director. He wants to be professional.
Oh, my God. You guys are killing me.
Dad, where's the meatloaf?
Hey, so, Billy, before we let you go, I want to talk, too, about... You're a big into the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, man. So talk a little bit about that because that's a lot
for
of
years, right?
For years, a lot of our listeners years, right? are into that. Can you talk a little bit about your history in that and sort of what you like to do and stuff? Shit.
So, yeah, man, it's a big part of my life, the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. We lined up, we saw the first UFC, and we were like fighters as kids. Like, we all, everybody in New York grew up fighting. But after losing so many, I think I was like, you know, I saw the fucking UFC. I'm like, I want to learn it from those motherfuckers. And we tracked down all these, everybody that we knew. And it was actually Vinny Stigma's, his sister, Paula.
Paula, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Paula, Sifu Paula.
Yep. We started a little bit of Wing Chun. And she, through them, we met this dude who was part of the Gracie family. And we hired the dude to bring on tour.
I remember that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And that was 19, it was after the first UFC, it was 1990, November 93 and 94 in the winter, we started training. And it's been nonstop ever since. So it's been a long time, but
that's amazing. Big part.
My wife's a fucking purple belt. My
that's
kids.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
My girl wants to start doing it. I was kind of scared, but she'll fuck me up then.
Bro.
Right?
That's. You're the one dude the Gracies won't fuck with, I bet.
Yo, I'm the Marcos Ruiz of New York hardcore.
Yep.
I step my niggas' toes.
Ah! Okay, awesome.
That's awesome, man. Well, Billy, thank you so much for joining us,
Billy,
on the Corona Chronicles,
you,
man. As a you know, as a fan, I just want one story before I let you go, because I don't even think you remember this, but I got to tell it on the show, because it's just so crazy. So this is probably like 2002. You guys were playing Toad's Place. My parents are away for vacation, right? And I'm having a party at my house. Josta brings Biohazard over to my house, and kids are bugging out because they're like, how is Biohazard at your house? And it was funny because we had kids.
That's hard.
Yo, it was hard because I have my high school friends and like the hardcore kids. So it was like two totally different things. Jamie walks in with Biohazard into like, you know, this party. And my mom calls and she's like, oh, blah, blah. She's like, what's going on? I said to her, yo, we're having a party. She didn't believe me. But literally there was a background and like these guys were there. And I love telling that story. So, Billy, you probably don't remember that, but I have to tell it because it's just. We talk about it all the time, the infamous, like, you know, Biohazard walking into my parents' house and hanging out with Josta while high school kids are going nuts.
You guys
played Toads that night, and it was a lot. It was just a great
show. I know. Josta is the age, man. I did sit a track with him.
He looks like Richie Rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did a track with him on his new record.
Yeah.
That came out great. But I remember, that's another thing. Jamie, another example. That dude always kept it fucking real.
Yep. He was hard fucking worker, one of the best guys in the world.
From promoting fucking bands as a little kid to being in fucking a band. And then he still keeps it fucking. He still does it. Fucking super successful. Good for him, man.
Billy, that's how.
Anyone in our scene, listen, if anyone in our scene can make it in music and make a living, I'm happy. I'm not a hater. I'm like,
yeah, no,
good
me
for them. But you know why? You know why? Because you guys are just as fucked up as I am for being my scene.
Yep.
Yeah, like, Billy, I met you actually. That's how we connected, was through Joss on the Kill or Be Killed album cycle. We did the marketing stuff for that, and you guys were doing a bunch of shows in Connecticut, and I just have so many great memories of that. So, dude, thank you for joining us on this. I know you were out there recording and doing stuff. So before we sign off, where can everybody find you online? Anything you want to plug before we let you go?
Yeah, I'm always online. It's Billy Biohazard everywhere. You could get my shit from Powerflow, Biohazard, Billy Bio, and I answer the shit personally, so hit me up. I love to talk to you. I'll tell you stories and I'll eat your band.
Yeah,
awesome, man. Well, Billy,
man,
thank
you
so
much.
Good seeing you guys, man. Love you too, brother. Good seeing you.
All right, yeah, be safe, Billy.
Guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Love you, brother.
Have a good one. Peace.
Yo, guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Corona Chronicles, episode number 4. This is myself, Jay Reason, and the one and only Danny Diablo signing off. So, E, thank you so much.
Yeah,
stay safe. Everybody sign off. Sign up for the newsletter. Sign up for the YouTube channel. All the good stuff. We will see you guys soon. Thank you so much. Peace.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This
is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.